Okay, we're going to continue to look at Dedekind cuts and see that they end up being the real number system. Set of all Dedekind cuts is the real number system. It is routine to verify that the set of all cuts with this definition of multiplication satisfies field axioms M1 through M5. The proofs follow those for A1 through A5 rather closely, so we won't bother to repeat them. For the distributive property, one first checks the case when all the cuts are positive, reducing it to the distributive property for the rationals, which is, of course, something you already know. And then you handle negative cuts on a case-by-case basis, just as we handle the definition of multiplication on a case-by-case basis. The two properties of an ordered field are also easily checked for the set of cuts. So we're going to take it for granted now that we have this collection of objects called cuts, and they have all the properties of a field. So they form a field. And we denote this symbol, this field, by the symbol blackboard bold R, the usual symbol for the reals, and we call it the real number system. Now we're going to verify the crucial property of the reals that sets it apart from the rationals. The ordered field R, the one we just constructed, satisfies the least upper bound property. This result is obviously the whole point of our work up to this point, because we know on account of this theorem that the set of Dedekind cuts is an ordered field containing the rationals. And we're going to see right now that it satisfies the least upper bound property. In fact, it's really actually pretty simple to prove. So here's the proof, just one screen. Let S be a subset of the reals which is bounded above. That is, there is a cut alpha so that S is less than alpha for all S, little s, and capital S. Define S star to be the union of all the cuts in this set S. That S star is clearly not empty, is therefore a cut since it is a union of cuts. It is also clearly an upper bound for S since it contains each element of S. It remains to check that S star is the least upper bound. In fact, if script T is less than S star, then T is a subset of S star, and there is a rational number Q in S star take away T. But by the definition of S star, it must be that Q is in C for some cut C in S, so C is greater than T, and T cannot be an upper bound for S. Therefore, S star is the least upper bound, and that's the end of the story. So, the set of all cuts forms a field, and it has the least upper bound property. It is the real numbers. So, it remains to show that R, as we've constructed it, contains the rationals in a natural way. In fact, if Q is in the rationals, we associate to it the element phi of Q, equals capital script C sub Q, which is a set of all X in the rationals, which is less than Q. And C sub Q is obviously a cut. And it is routine to check that phi of Q plus Q star equals phi of Q plus phi of Q star, and phi of Q times Q star equals phi of Q times Q, phi of Q star. So phi is what we call a ring homomorphism, and so it represents Q as a subfield of R. Okay. That ends our study of the real number system, at least for a while. And now we'll go to the next most complicated complex number system, which is the complex numbers. The way we are taught about the complex numbers in high school is somewhat misleading. We are led to believe that this number system is some mysterious object containing imaginary numbers, one of which plays the role of the square root of minus one. This is the wrong way to think about things. Just as with our other number systems, we're going to construct the complex numbers. It will follow from this construction that there is an element I in the complex number so that I times I equals minus 1. Now, this won't be something in our imagination. This will be something that's concretely true, just like everything we've proved about the natural numbers and the integers, the rational numbers, the reals is concretely true. It will just be true for reasons of algebra. So what we will see is that complex numbers are just R cross R, where R is the reals, equipped with two binary operations, addition and multiplication. So if you have one ordered pair of reals, x, y, and another ordered pair of reals, x prime, y prime, you add them together to get x plus x prime, y plus y prime. Now, the way we multiply them might surprise you a little bit. We're not going to multiply x, y times x prime to get x prime, y prime, because that wouldn't give the right answer. And it wouldn't be well defined. Instead, we're going to say that x comma y times x prime comma y prime is x times x prime minus y times y prime comma x y prime plus x prime y. Uh, If you are puzzled by this definition of multiplication, then don't worry. In a few moments, you will see that it gives rise to the notion of multiplication of complex numbers that you have known all your life. In any event, this notion of multiplication has the properties we need and gives the answers that we want. It is interesting to note that, unlike the integers and the rational numbers, the new system of complex numbers is not a collection of equivalence classes. Instead, C is the Euclidean plane equipped with some new algebraic operations. Example, let z equal 3, minus 2, and w equal 4, 7 be two complex numbers. Then z plus w is 3, minus 2, plus 4, 7, which is 3 plus 4, minus 2, plus 7, which is 7, 5. Also, z times w, which is 3, minus 2, times 4, 7, is 4 times 3 times 4, minus 2 times 7, 3 times 7, plus minus 2 times 4. That's 12 plus 14 is 26, 21 minus 8 is 13. As usually, we ought to check that addition and multiplication are commutative, associative, and that multiplication distributes over addition, and so forth. We shall leave these tasks to the exercises. Instead, we shall develop some of the crucial properties of this new complex number system. The following properties hold for complex numbers. The number 1 equals 1, 0 is the multiplicative identity. 1 times z equals z for any complex number z. The number 0 equals 0, 0 is the additive identity. 0 plus z equals z for any complex number z. Each complex number z equals x, y has an additive inverse. Minus z equals minus x, minus y, meaning that z plus minus z equals 0. And the number I, which is 0, 1, satisfies I times I equals minus 1, 0, which is minus 1. In other words, I is a square root of minus 1. These are direct calculations, but it's important for us to work them out so that we can see how the complex numbers work. So first, let z equal x, y be any complex numbers. Then 1 times z is 1, 0 times x, y, which, according to our multiplication rule, is 1 times x take away 0 times y, 1 times y plus 0 times x, which is x, y, which is z. So 1 times z equals z. That takes care of the first assertion. For the second one, we have 0 plus z equals 0, 0 plus x, y, which is 0 plus x, 0 plus y, which is x, y, which is z. So 0 plus z equals z. With z as above, set minus z equal minus x minus y. Then z plus minus z is x, y plus minus x, minus y, which is x plus minus x, y plus minus y, which is 0, 0, which is 0. And finally, we calculate that I times I equals 0, 1 times 0, 1, which is 0 times 0 minus 1 times 1, 0 times 1 plus 1 times 0, which is minus 1, 0, which is minus 1. So I times I is minus 1. In other words, I is a square root of minus 1. Proposition. If z is a complex number which is not 0, then there is a complex number w such that z times w equals 1. Now, you might be tempted to think that the number w is simply 1 over z, but 1 over z is not a complex number. It's just a bunch of symbols on the page, but it's not a complex number. A complex number is an ordered pair of reals. So if z equals x, y is not 0, we set w equal to x divided by x squared plus y squared, minus y divided by x squared plus y squared. You can see that w is a complex number. X divided by x squared plus y squared is a real number, minus y divided by x squared plus y squared is a real number. And what we're going to do is multiply z times w and see if we get the answer 1. So z times w is x, y times x divided by x squared plus y squared, minus y divided by x squared plus y squared. And according to our multiplication rule, this is x times x divided by x squared plus y squared, minus y times minus y divided by x squared plus y squared, x times minus y divided by x squared plus y squared, plus y times x divided by x squared plus y squared. And that is simply 1, 0, which is 1. So w is the multiplicative inverse of z. The other field axioms for C are easy to check. We will conclude that the number system C forms a field. It is not possible to order this field, and the proof is in the exercises. If alpha is a real number, then we associate alpha with the complex number alpha, 0, and this way we can think of the real numbers as a subset of the complex numbers. In fact, the real field R is a subfield of the complex field C. This means that if alpha, beta, and R alpha comma 0, beta comma 0 are the corresponding elements in C, then alpha plus beta corresponds to alpha plus beta comma 0, alpha times beta corresponds to alpha comma 0 dot beta comma 0 equals alpha beta comma 0. With the remarks in these preceding paragraphs, we could sometimes ignore the distinction between the real numbers and the complex numbers. For example, we could write 5 times I and understand that it means 5 comma 0 times 0 comma 1, which is 0 comma 5. Likewise, the expression 5 times 1 can be interpreted as 5 times 1 equals 5, or as 5 comma 0 times 1 comma 0 equals 5 comma 0, without any danger of ambiguity or misunderstanding. Theorem. Every complex number can be written in the form a plus bi, where a and b are real numbers. In fact, if z equals a comma b is in complex numbers, then z equals a plus bi. Proof. Very short. With the identification of real numbers as a subfield of complex numbers, we have that a plus bi equals a comma 0 plus b comma 0 times 0 comma 1 equals a comma 0 plus 0 comma b equals a comma b equals z. So that explains this new notation, which is actually the notation that you used in high school. Now that we have constructed the complex number field, we will adhere to the usual custom of writing complex numbers as a plus bi, and we call a the real part of this complex number and b the imaginary part. In this notation, our algebraic operations become a plus bi plus a star plus b star I equals a plus a star plus b star plus b star times I, and a plus bi times a star plus b star I equals a times a star minus b times b star plus the quantity a times b star plus a star b times I. If a plus ib is a complex number, then we define its complex conjugate to be the number z bar, which is a minus bi. We record some elementary facts about the complex conjugate. Proposition. If z and w are complex numbers, then z plus w conjugate is z conjugate plus w conjugate. Z times w conjugate is z conjugate times w conjugate. Z plus z conjugate is twice the real part of z. Z minus z conjugate is 2i times the imaginary part of z. And z times z conjugate is bigger than or equal to 0, with equality holding if and only if z equals 0. So these are elementary properties, but they're properties we're going to use all the time when we manipulate the complex numbers. So for the proof, write z equals a plus bi, w equals c plus di, then z plus w all conjugated equals a plus c plus b plus d times I all conjugated, which is a plus c minus the quantity b plus d times I, which is a minus bi plus c minus di, which is z conjugate plus w conjugate. So that proves the first property. Assertions 2, 3, and 4 are proved similarly. For 5, notice that z times z conjugate is a plus bi times a minus bi, which is a squared plus b squared, which is bigger than or equal to 0, and equality holds if and only if a and b are both 0. The expression bar z bar is defined to be the non-negative square root of z times z bar. In other words, bar z bar equals square root of z times z conjugate equals the square root of x plus iy times x minus iy, which is the square root of x squared plus y squared. This is called the modulus of z. It plays the same role for the complex numbers that absolute value plays for the real field. The modulus of z measures the distance of z to the origin. The modulus has these four elementary properties. If z and w are complex numbers, then modulus z equals modulus z conjugate. Modulus z times w is modulus z times modulus w. Absolute value real z less than or equal to modulus z. Absolute value imaginary part z less than or equal to modulus z. And modulus of z plus w is less than or equal to modulus z plus modulus w. So let's prove some of these things. Write z equals a plus bi and w equals c plus di. Then 1, 2, and 3 are obvious. For 4, we calculate that modulus z plus w all squared is equal to z plus w times z plus w conjugated, which is z times z conjugate plus z times w conjugate plus w times z conjugate plus w times w conjugate, which is modulus z squared plus twice the real part of z times w conjugate plus modulus w squared, which is less than or equal to modulus z squared plus twice modulus z times w conjugate, because the real part of a complex number is less than or equal to its modulus, plus modulus w squared, which is equal to modulus z squared plus 2 modulus z times modulus w plus modulus w squared, which is the quantity modulus c plus modulus w all squared. Taking square roots then gives you the triangle inequality number 4. Note that if z is real, then z equals a plus 0i, and the modulus of z equals the absolute value of a. Likewise, if z equals 0 plus bi is pure imaginary, then the modulus of z equals the absolute value of b. In particular, the fourth part of the proposition reduces in the real case to the traditional triangle inequality. The most important property of the complex number c is that c is algebraically complete. This means that any polynomial p of z equals a naught plus a1z plus a2z squared plus dot 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 plus akz to the k with complex coefficients has a complex root. This result was first proved by Carl Friedrich Gauss in his doctoral dissertation written in the late 18th century. He ultimately produced 5 distinct proofs of the result. Gauss's theorem was the capstone of hundreds of years of the development of particular methods for solving specific polynomials. Now we may be sure that the polynomial p of z, which is 3 minus 5z plus 9z squared plus 4z cubed minus 12z to the 4th plus 23z to the 5th, has a root. Indeed, it has 5 roots, even though we have no idea how to actually find them. Example, let us find all the roots of the polynomial p of z is z cubed plus minus 3 minus iz squared plus 2 plus 3iz minus 2i. With some experimentation, we find that z equals 1 is a root. Dividing p by z minus 1, we find that p of z equals z minus 1 times z squared plus minus 2 minus iz plus 2i. Of course, we can solve the quadratic polynomial using the quadratic formula, and we find 2 additional roots, 2 and i. Of course, this result, the fundamental theorem of algebra, is a deep and difficult theorem. That's the end for today. Thank you for listening.